welcome everybody. We invite you to slow down, pull up a chair, and get ready for some great sales stories with that pilgrim on the 405, Will Crist, as he gathers his friends together and pulls together his fellow road warriors to share the latest techniques and technologies that will let you learn how to blaze new trails in the world of sales. It all starts right now with your host, Will Crist.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. As one of the pilgrims on the 405, I spend a lot of time listening to business owners talk about their businesses. I always want to know where they want to be in 12 months, and I also want to know where they are right now. Finally, the most important question is, what's getting in the way? And once I know that, I can begin to go to work. Now, the pilgrim's job is to find reasons to hope. I don't mean the false hope of pretending or the false hope that leads somebody to try to believe something that's not true. I mean the hope that's coming from having access to resources that help business owners accomplish his or her goals. It's the hope that comes from a plan that will work. The stories you hear on the Pilgrim's Talk are from either people who are resources for Orange County business owners, or they're from business owners themselves who have a plan and are executing it every day. Now, that's the task of this pilgrim, to find out what people need, to find the resources, and to help people get moving. Join us. We're helping Orange County thrive. Now, one of the people that I discovered in the last week is a couple of people on the West Coast who are really helping salespeople in this economy right now, because they know that a lot of times people are going to be hearing no, 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 no. And in fact, what these two folks are doing is they're helping people to go for the no. They're going to tell us that yes is always the destination, but no is how you get there. So I want to introduce two people today, Andrea Waltz and Richard Fenton. They'll be sharing their radical business building concepts, including how to reprogram the way you think about no, how to create a mindset that encourages persistence and tenacity, and specific go-for-no strategies, not only increase sales, but have you feeling excited to grow your business even in these tough times. So welcome, Andrea and Richard.
Hey, Will, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what this go-for-no stuff is all about?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for the past few years, we've been speaking on this topic. We wrote a book called Go for No, which, like you said, the subtitle is Yes is the Destination, No is How You Get There. It's a little bit of a counterintuitive philosophy, and primarily what we are teaching people to do is to intentionally increase what we call their failure rate, or the number of times they hear the word no in a day, week, month, or even year, in order to increase and improve their sales and their productivity.
Yeah, because, you know, Will, everybody loves the sound of the word yes, right? We all love it when somebody tells us yes. It's so positive. It's so empowering. And then there's no. You know, no is the exact opposite. It's negative. It's draining. You know, the question that we always ask everybody is, well, you know, what if everybody's wrong? What if no could actually be the most empowering word in the world? What if you could achieve every goal, you know, hit your quota if you're a salesperson, live the life of your dreams, simply by learning to hear the word no more often? And we've come to believe that that's the case.
So tell me a little bit about what it means to go for no. I mean, what I told Jeff Swartz, a good friend of mine from Daily Swartz, does a lot of PR work in Orange County. I told him about a radio show, and I told him what was coming, and he just fell back laughing. He said, I get plenty of no's every day. You want me to get more no's? What would I say to Jeff?
That's a great point. Well, the reality is he might actually be in a rather special category, Will, because Rich and I believe that most people do not hear no more often. Most people do not have a no awareness. In fact, most people do everything within their power to avoid hearing no and to only go for, quote, the yes. And so what this looks like in terms of a sales strategy is going after the low-hanging fruit, making the easy sales calls, not going after the big fish, maybe having a fear around the idea of no so that you only make a couple calls, and if you get too many no's, you're deflated, disgusted, depressed, and you give up. And so what we're trying to do is explain to people that, yes, it is a numbers game, and obviously your friend understands that because in order to get to yes, you're going to hear a lot of no's. And then there's the emotional component, too, which is to feel differently about those no's so that you do keep getting them so that you can get to those yeses.
Right. And, Will, if I could add a short little classic story for your friend or for anybody else who has that feeling like, oh, wait a second, this doesn't make any sense. Why would I be trying to go for no? Well, the go for no phrase and actually the philosophy came from an actual event that happened to me in my life. It happened to me when I was in my 20s. And I won't tell the entire story here, but let's just suffice it to say that I was working in the clothing business. I had just finished a very large sale for a customer. I was extremely proud of myself. And the manager walked over to me and said, you know, hey, nice sale. And I said, yeah, wasn't that great? And then he asked this question. And the question was, what did that customer say no to? And I said, what do you mean, what did he say no to? You know, he bought a suit. He bought a sport coat. And he goes, yeah, I know all the stuff he said yes to. He said, what did he say no to? And when I reviewed the sale in my mind, Will, what I realized was that the customer hadn't said no to anything. Every single thing I showed that man, he purchased. And I said, hey, he didn't say no to anything. And he said, well, then how'd you know he was done shopping? Well, the go for no philosophy says that when you're working with a customer, even when somebody says yes to you, our natural tendency is to say, great, I got a sale. Let's shut it down quick. Let's write up the order. Well, let's not take any chances of pushing too hard. And what we do is we oftentimes walk out with a small yes, where we could have gotten a medium or a big size yes or lots of yeses if we were willing to also get that customer say no to us a few times. And so it's counterintuitive, and we say we believe that it works. It's really more than we believe that it works. We have the statistical proof and the testimonials to back it up.
Well, tell me about the statistical proof.
Well, let's see. When we say statistical proof,
one of our favorite statistics, yeah, Rich, is the level of no's. 44% of all salespeople give up after hearing no one time.
Right.
And I believe from there it jumps to...
Yeah, so if you think of this statistically, 44% of people, as Andrea said, give up when they hear no once. Another 22% give up when they hear no a second time. 14% more give up after they hear a third no. 12% more give up after a fourth no. Well, when you add that together, you basically see that 92% of all salespeople have given up after getting a fourth no. And yet, statistically, research shows that 60% of all customers say no four times before they finally say yes. So when you do the math and you look at it, you say, wait a second, 92% of the salespeople have gone, packed up their bags and gone home before getting a fifth no. And yet 60% of all of the customers are still out there. So if you learn to hang in the game, if you learn to get past that fourth or fifth no, you have 8% of the salespeople sharing about 60% of the market. That's just one example. And then, of course, we have all of the different companies that we have worked with, including a major lingerie chain who we worked with of all businesses who, you know, 1 month after doing go-for-no training with us for all of their people, had a $500,000 sales increase, and the only thing they changed was that they, from the date of that training, started going out of their way to make sure that they were having their customers say no to them more often. They changed nothing else.
You know, it sounds to me like this is a mindset change. I'm thinking that in Orange County right now, like it was back in the mid-90s, lots of people downsized, and they're not trying to get back into corporate America. They've got computers, they've got iPhones, they've got businesses that they can run from their mobile devices, and they're on their own looking for new business. They may not have been in sales before.
Mm-hmm.
What's the message that we want to give to those folks who are starting businesses, that are looking for, they think they're looking for yeses? What do we want to say to them? How do they begin to change their whole perception of what they're doing in the world?
Well, our first advice would be that you have to get out of this mindset that suggests that you celebrate every time somebody says yes to you, and then you allow yourself to get emotionally deflated or beat yourself up every time somebody says no to you. That puts people on this emotional roller coaster where we're high one minute, we're low the next, we're high one minute, we're low later, and then at the end of the day, the end of the week, we wonder why we feel exhausted. Well, you know, you just, all you have to do is get on a real roller coaster sometime for 90 seconds and see how it feels when you get off. Well, that's what we do to ourselves emotionally. What we suggest to anyone who's working in the business world is that when you hear the word yes, and it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, you're selling a product, a service, an idea, whether you're trying to get your kids to eat their peas, it doesn't matter what it is that you're selling. When you hear a yes, don't get all excited and celebrate it. Just go, okay, good, I got a yes. When you get a no, don't allow yourself to get deflated. Say, okay, good, I got a no. Start to even those things out, because if you look at it as a diagram, and if we believe that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, and let's face it, it is, and if you're on one end and where you want to be is on the other, well, the shortest distance to get to where you are, from where you are to your goal, is not up and down on an emotional roller coaster. It's on a straight, even-keeled line. And that's the biggest mistake that people make, is that they think there's no harm in celebrating the yeses, and they don't realize that that's how they start this process of getting on the roller coaster.
Absolutely. And, Will, I just want to add, too, to kind of dovetail onto what Rich said, especially about to these people that own all these kinds of different businesses. You know, the reality is there's a tendency to, you know, start a business and kind of hope that it's going to be easy, and to maybe start and think that you're not going to have to ultimately ask for the sale, and no matter what you're selling, ultimately you're going to be put in a position to where, you know, you need to ask someone to buy whatever it happens to be. And so that, I think, is where Rich's advice really comes into play. It doesn't matter what type of business you have started or you're trying to get involved in. Ultimately, we're all selling something one way or the other.
One of the things we say around here a lot is we want to avoid getting emotionally involved. Mm. And what our mantra around here is, the first person on a sales call to get emotionally involved takes the product or the service home with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what I'm hearing is that emotional involvement is not only getting excited about it, it could be the no or the yes.
That's, yeah, absolutely. You have to have kind of an emotional neutrality to the outcome. In fact, what makes, I think, Go for No so powerful is that this philosophy is, it is a mindset, as you pointed out. It is a mind shift that we're asking people to make, but also it's all about behaviors. It's getting out there. It's picking up the phone or making the contacts. Or if you're in an interaction and asking for additional products or services or upselling, however you want to look at it. So it's a behavior. And so that really takes all of the emotion out of it, is just focus on doing the behavior and do leave your emotions at the door.
Aha. Uh-huh. So doing the behaviors is what's significant, not how you feel about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now, can I get some coaching from you guys? I is that okay?
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. So I have a client who came to me. He's an expert in helping construction companies get federal construction contracts. He has a workshop, a three-day workshop and a 90-day program that will absolutely help construction companies get federal contracts. And that's where most of the money is right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're $300 billion short on the commercial building, but federal government is putting a lot of money through construction contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing is we're calling construction companies. Now, I hear from them, we've done that before, it didn't work. We're already doing that. We don't need it anymore. We don't need any help. We're doing fine. Now, those are all no's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm hearing from you is I should be looking for even more no's from them than that one.
Absolutely. And you can look at this. You can look at this first off. You have to look at any sales interaction and say that there are always two pieces to the presentation puzzle, if you will. Those two pieces are what we call quantity and quality. The quantity part is the quantity of presentations you make, or in other words, the number of times you knock on a door, the number of sales presentations that you engage in, right? The number of times you go for no. The quality piece of a presentation is how well you do the presentation, how you deliver it, whether you can talk about features and benefits properly, whether you can answer people's objections. And you have the quantity piece and you have the quality piece. What most people do is when they say, boy, I'm not making the sales I should make. You know, we're making calls every day, but no one's buying. What they do is they say there must be something wrong with the quality of my presentation. And in some cases, there might be. We're not suggesting that quality doesn't matter. Quality does matter. You should learn to be a great salesperson. But the problem is that when people start thinking it's the quality of their presentation and they make 10 presentations in a day and no one says yes, they think, wow, you know what? I'm just no good at this. I'm just not very good at selling. So what's the point of making 10 more calls? Our position is real simple. The people who want the product and service that somebody has to buy, you know, has to offer, will want it with a bad presentation as well as with a good presentation. We think that if we just get better at the presentation, we can make non-buyers into buyers, that we can persuade somebody who's not an appropriate customer to be an appropriate customer. In most cases, that's just not the case. A bad presentation delivered to the right customer will still sell a product or service because that customer has the need for what it is that you're selling. And so if you were to make 10 calls in a day and everyone said no, our recommendation would be, why don't you make 30 or 40 calls in a day? Shorten the presentations up. In other words, instead of trying to throw more and more features and benefits out there and trying to twist people's arms into getting them to buy, it's just explain what it is that you have to offer in the most succinct way possible to a greater number of people, playing the numbers game and letting that work in your favor, and have faith that the people who want it will take it. Now, it's one thing for us just to say, hey, trust us, this works. Like I said, we've worked with, you know, hundreds of companies and teaching these philosophies, and we have yet to find a company where increasing the quantity of their presentations didn't also, at least proportionately, and sometimes to a much greater degree, increase the number of sales they make. And so it is a counterintuitive approach. We have no doubt about that. But the reality is the more presentations you make, the more you sell.
Correct. And now just to kind of flip that a little bit, obviously if the number of prospects that you have goes down, like if you sell jet engines, you don't have a lot of people that you can go after. You've got Boeing and a few other places that you can go, and that's pretty much it. You're kind of done. So obviously as the quantity goes down, your quality has to go up. So the coaching I would offer to your client is if they don't have a lot of construction companies to go after, if there is a limited number, and if they are getting no, then what happens is after time you can start saying, you know what, what I need to start, that known means that there's some more information here that we need to find out. We need to start digging, and we need to start maybe analyzing our quality, because if you do just continuously get no, then there may be something that you can learn from those no's, because obviously there comes a point where you do want to learn from your no's.
Well, just at first blush, there's only about 1,700 construction companies within 3 miles of where I am right now. So
wow.
I think
okay,
that's
so
probably
there you go.
Enough.
Now, okay, well, that's
one
good.
One of the things I picked up from your excellent book, Go for No, was that I was thinking that I've seen lots of people high-five each other when they get a yes. Mm-hmm. And as I was reading your book, you were talking about what happens when you celebrate. You know, I think you had a fellow in there who was had a quota of 4 sales a week. He got 3 in the first couple of days. Tell us a little bit about what happens when you're focusing on yes.
Well, what happens when most people focus on the word yes, and that's a great example here. And I'll use the example of Andrea and I. When we first started our business doing professional speaking, we had a goal of speaking 4 times a month. That's what we wanted to do. We wanted to get out in front of an audience and be paid for it once a week. And what would happen is we'd get on the phone the first week of the month, and maybe we'd have a great first week. And we would sell 4 speaking engagements the very first week. Well, you know, what do you think we would do with the rest of the month? You know, we'd screw off. We'd lay by the pool. We'd go to movies. We'd take a 3-day weekend. You know, we clean out the garage. We do a lot of things, but what we didn't do was we didn't continue to make sales presentations, because once we had hit our yes goal, 4 yeses for the month, then what happens is our sales productivity came to a screeching halt. So when you take the opposite approach, which is not to set yes goals for the number of times people are going to buy your product and service, but to set no goals instead, goals for the number of times that people say no, then you approach it differently.
Exactly. So what we did was we said, okay, what would happen if we set a goal to have 100 companies this month tell us, no, we do not want you to come in and do a presentation for our people? Well, it was amazing, because when we had to get that many no's, we had more business than we knew what to do with. Because we'd get on the phone and we'd call and we'd get our yes goal, and sometimes it'd be in the middle of the month and we still had this huge no goal to reach. So we'd keep going and keep calling and keep trying to get these no's and get those no's under our belt, and it was amazing what would happen as a result of that.
Right, and when we say it's a mindset change, imagine that your goal was to get 4 yeses for the month. You got on the phone on the first of the month, Monday morning, and you made 4 calls, and all 4 people said yes to you. And at noon on that day, instead of saying, hey, I'm done for the month, you said, wow, I haven't gotten any no's yet. I'm behind. That's a change.
What I heard you guys do is I heard that you celebrate, and we might have an award for the people who hit their quota of no's this month.
Yeah, exactly. And Rich and I do celebrate our no's, and sometimes we've gotten some big no's. And you know, in the past, those no's would have devastated us. Now we understand we have to be on that equal emotional intensity of both yes and no. So we do celebrate them, and so we recommend in the book, we give an example of a company that does award that no prize.
Well, let me ask you a question. We've got lots of people here in Orange County who are building their business, who are faced with, because of the downturn in the economy, because of layoffs, because of all sorts of changes, they're faced with a lot of no's. I'm wondering if it might be valuable to them. I'm wondering if it might be something you'd be willing to do. If we were to put on a teleseminar sometime in the next month to help people change their whole world, change the way they're looking at business, change the way that they're approaching the telephone, so that, you know, that it's not like making 30 calls a day and I got to slug through that, but really going for the no and then celebrating how many I really got. Is that something you guys would be willing to do?
Absolutely.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, I think that we could probably put together a teleseminar sometime in the next month. They could come to my site, which is pilgrimonthe405.com. They can see the construction work seminar that we're going to be doing in April. They can also see the teleseminar. that we're going to be doing with you guys. And that might be a way, and we could certainly record it and make it available to folks, because you guys have such a tremendous program with your CDs and your books and all the material that's on your site. Tell us where your site is.
Yeah, it's just like you would think. Well, it's goforno.com, so G-O-F-O-R-N-O.com.
That's wonderful. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you'd like to say right as we come to an end here?
I think the only thing we love to wrap up with is that GoForNo is a sales philosophy. Rich and I like to also tell people it's a life philosophy. We want to encourage people to get out there and hear no, not just in their business, but practice. If you walk into a restaurant on your anniversary night and there's some fabulous table in the front window and they sit you in the back next to the water station, well, just remember that you can ask the hostess, hey, what about that fabulous table in the window? And you never know, you might just get it.
That's wonderful. Now, I know you said goforno.com. Is there any other way that somebody could get in touch with you if they wanted you to speak or if they wanted to get some coaching from you or buy some of your products?
The GoForNo is the place to come.
Right, and if they do want to email us, they would email us at info@goforno.com, info@goforno.com.
Well, listen, this has been wonderful. I was so excited when we first started talking last week, and I was looking forward to this, and it's been even better than I thought it'd be. So let's go for the no. Let's find those places out there, because it's almost like Easter eggs, isn't it?
That's right.
We know they're out there. We just got to keep looking, finding all the no's that are the rocks, and keep looking for those Easter eggs. So thanks a lot, Richard, and thanks, Andrea. This has been a lot of fun. I look forward to working with you on a teleseminar in the next 30 days.
Absolutely. Right. Thanks for having us, Will.
And there we go. A couple of people who are searching for the no, and in the midst of that stumble over more yeses than they can even fulfill on. That's wonderful. There are tremendous resources out there for business owners in Orange County. These are some of them. We'll continue to bring them on and put them on the show, because this is the place that we're going to be reporting on all of the tales that we find out walking up and down the street, driving up and down the 405, because that's the job of the pilgrim. Remember that what my job is to listen to your stories, because I want to know where you want to be in 12 months. I want to know where you are right now, and then what's getting in the way. And one of the things I heard from Andrea and Richard was that very often the fear of getting a no can get in the way of me going to where I want to go. So once we know where we want to go, then we can find reasons. We can go out and find places to build hope. That kind of hope that comes from having access to the resources, to the time, and to the funds that will help us accomplish the goals that we have as businesses. And as business owners, we have a responsibility not only to ourselves and our family, but to all those families who look to us to provide those businesses for them so they can provide for their families. My goal is to help strengthen businesses in Orange County so that we can thrive and so that the county can thrive, so that the people who live here can improve the quality of their life. So the next guest that we have on the show tonight was a find. I mentioned Jeffrey Schwartz, good friend of mine, introduced me to Dave Schwartz. Dave is a very, very creative guy. Now, I don't know how many of you out there have iPhones yet. I don't know how many of you have gotten your credit cards ready for the Apple iPad, but there's lots of apps out there that do incredible things. Dave Schwartz has an incubator for apps. I was astounded when I heard that he has 20,000 ideas waiting to be developed right now. I got a chance to spend some time with David yesterday. What an incredible roller coaster he is on. What a path he's cutting. I want to introduce you to one of Orange County's most creative and innovative guys, and certainly one of the stars of where we're going to be in 2 years. Dave, are you there?
I'm here. Well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to live up to that intro, but I thank you very much.
Oh, tell us a little bit about what you've done over there at Metal Mobile.
Sure. So, well, Mental Mobile, as you said, is an application incubator. We build all sorts of applications. We build them for ourselves. We build them for clients. We build them for people who happen to have great ideas. And really, it came about in an interesting way. As you said, you know, I like to think of myself as a creative guy. I was the former creative director of a big agency down in Orange County, a place called DGWB, which is a great advertising agency. And, you know, from where I was sitting, I just felt like the industry was changing all around me, and I wanted to kind of get out and maybe get a little bit more grassroots and work with, really, you know, closer with the business owners. I was working with a lot of the bigger clients, and you know, I started getting in with you know, some local companies, and I started working with them on their marketing efforts and broke apart from the big agency. And one of the things that I saw early on as I was working was this app revolution that was going on around us, where the concept of being able to build a kind of a little mobile piece of software that sat on your phone, that interacted with your life, there were just some really powerful things happening. And I said, I want to do that for my clients. These are companies that they want to get their products into people's hands, and they want to build stronger relationships with their customers. And I felt like an app was a great way to do that. So, you know, I didn't really know where to start. I started looking around for companies that I could hire to build apps for me and for my clients. I have a good friend his name is Andrew Malton, and he's actually the co-founder of Metal. His background is in technology, and I kind of tapped into him and said, you know, can you help me figure out how to build some apps for some of my clients? We spent, I'm going to say, 3 months trying to find a firm that we could trust. We, you know, wasn't from a lack of trying. We called everybody. We ended up speaking to overseas developers, San Francisco-based guys, big companies, small companies. You know, we're back when we were starting this thing, we were talking about basically a year into the Apple iPhone business. And what had happened is all these people who had built themselves an app or built one or two apps were now positioning themselves as app development specialists. And you know, we just couldn't find anybody who really was rising above the, you know, I've built one app for my friend or, you know, I've built something here and there. And we just saw a giant, you know, niche in the marketplace. We figured we're a little bit ahead of the curve and looking for this service. And we predicted that other people would be coming to look for it down the road. So we stopped trying to build, you know, one or two apps, and we started trying to build a company that builds apps. So we hired everybody we could. We hired people in Pakistan and India and China and San Francisco and Boston and Tennessee, and we just experimented with a whole bunch of different developers to see what was out there, who was good, who was bad. And you know, we certainly made a bunch of mistakes and wasted some money with some people, and then there were other people that we found some really fantastic relationships and ended up finding some partnerships and ended up finding some employees. And you know, we started it, I would guess, probably about 18 months ago with this idea that there wasn't a brand name in application development, and there was a definite need for that to happen. And here we are today. We've got about 20 employees. We're building apps for Emirates Airlines, for Focus Features, for some Orange County companies. We're doing an app with a company called Ortholine. It's a great medical, you know, devices company. And then, you know, in addition to what we're doing on our branded side, we're building a whole bunch of ideas that are just apps that we love. I mean, at their core, apps are fun, and it's just a really fun business to be in, because now that we have these development resources, we can come up with great ideas and experiment and build them, and you know, we're just having a whole lot of fun.
Tell me what it's like to be at ground zero for the app revolution. How did you get these 20? How's it 20,000? Is that what you have sitting there, ideas?
Yeah. So basically what happened was, after a couple of months of building iPhone applications, I pretty much couldn't go anywhere without people saying to me, hey, I heard that you're building iPhone apps. You know, my kids' school, birthday parties, didn't matter where you went, I was the iPhone app guy. And every single person who I met wanted to pitch me on their idea for a great app. You know, you haven't heard this before, let me tell you what my idea is. If you made my idea, you'd make $1 million. And you know, I was getting these pitches all the time, and my partner Andrew was getting them all the time. And the truth is that a lot of them were really good. And there were so many good ones that just in the circle of friends that we had, that we said, you know, there's got to be a way to tap into this kind of entrepreneurialism and this ideation and this creativity that's out there. How do we how do we crowdsource it, and how do we get people an outlet for their ideas? So we built this thing called the Application Incubator. It's an iPhone app that you can download on the store. It's a website, and we're actually about to launch the new version of the App Incubator as well. Excuse me. So the App Incubator allows people to submit their ideas directly to us. If we like the idea, the deal that we have in place is if we love it, we build it, and if we build it, we share the profits back with the person who submitted the idea.
Well, let me tell you, my producer, Paul, is jumping up and down in the other room right now.
He's saying,
tell him we need an app for OC Talk Radio.
You know what? Everybody needs an app. That's the truth. I mean, everybody doesn't necessarily need some of the joke apps, and I mean, there's certainly a lot of clutter out in the App Store, but apps are a natural extension of any brand or any company or any idea that wants to build a relationship with lots of people. You know, you build this little piece of technology and people carry it around on their phone and they play with it and they show their friends and you know, we've got some that people use every day and they're part of their lives, and it's a pretty exciting thing. So, you know, when we built the App Incubator, we didn't know what was going to happen. We just kind of put it up there and we launched it. We actually launched it on April 1st, which is kind of ironic when we realized that was the day that we were launching. And by the end of our first week, we had 2,000 submissions. By the end of our second week, we had 4,000 submissions. And the storm of ideas just hasn't stopped. We now get, you know, sometimes we'll get 500 submissions in a day on a really big day.
it's
exciting.
Now, help me. Help people out there to think through what should they be thinking about when they like Paul over here. Mm-hmm. Paul on OC Talk Radio is thinking we need an app. What should he be thinking about when he thinks about app?
Well, I guess he should, you know, there's a couple of different ways to think about it. There's some people who think about it that they want to create something clever and fun that they believe lots of people will buy, and then they can make money selling it that way. And there's certainly a business model there, but it's harder and harder to do that. You know, there's now about 150,000 apps in the store, and our job with the incubator gets harder and harder because we're being more and more critical and more selective of those ideas that we're picking, because there just has to be something just magical about it that's really going to catch a spark. And that magic could be, it serves a function that previously you just couldn't do, and now because of mobile technology and GPS and the accelerometer and some of the things that you can do with the phone, you can do a new function that you couldn't do before, or it simplifies a task, or it makes life easy. And then, you know, for businesses, it's really about what are you looking for, what kind of an ROI are you looking for? Are you looking for a brand statement where you just want to be known as a cool company and a cutting-edge company? And I'll give you an example. We built an app for Wiener Schnitzel, which is, you know, Orange County favorite, my favorite hot dog. And Wiener Schnitzel, there were two objectives with that app. One is they're great restaurants, but they're kind of spread out and they're a little bit sparse. So the app finds you your nearest Wiener Schnitzel. You press the button and it pulls up a map and shows you where you are and where you can get to your nearest Wiener Schnitzel, which for people who love the brand, that's a really great service. It also helps the brand because it just makes them feel really cutting edge to have an iPhone application for you know, a fast food retailer like that. It puts them at a different level against their competition. So there's benefit there. We actually built that one with a coupon model that they can populate the coupon within the app, and customers can use the app to walk into the store and get and use the actual coupon. So, from their standpoint, they can use the app and they can test new offers. They can swap offers in and out. They can see how they're doing, and it's not just a fun thing for the customers. It's actually a business tool for them as well. So there's so many different things that you can do with an app. It really depends on your space and what you want to do. We just completed an app for a medical devices company that I said that the app is really for about 10 to 15 people to download, and that's it. And, you know, the app is for their sales force to help them sell their product and get out to market and speak to their customers. And it's a fantastic app. It simulates their product, which is a very expensive product to take out and show off. And now they can take their product out and show it off on a $199 iPad.
So people should probably be thinking, what can I use this information stream for? Is it to attract people to me? Is it to bring information to someone else? Is it to keep my site or my brand sticky so that people are paying attention to me? It seems to me those are the kind of questions that people should be asking.
You know, I think people should be asking really fundamental marketing questions. If you're talking about a small business owner and you're talking about using mobile technology, I would even take the mobile out of the equation for a moment and just say, what are your business goals? What are you trying to achieve? Are you trying to get more business out of a small group of people, or are you trying to get more and more people to know that you exist and that you're on this planet? Are you trying to get the people who you have relationships with to come to you more often? I mean, these are all kind of standard business development questions that any company is going to face. And I think a mobile application is just a new way to achieve those goals. So it's not necessarily what an app does. It's what do you want to do, and then working with a team to tailor an app to achieve that.
So this is back to the Pilgrim's question. Where do you want to be? Where are you now? And maybe the next question is, could a mobile app help you get there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're asking the question for us, I mean, we talk to businesses every day that are looking for mobile technology to help them move forward. And you know, some of them have tremendous budgets and they can do some pretty complicated things, and some of them have very modest budgets, but the truth is that on iPhone development, it's not a cost of entry like some types of marketing and some types of efforts. You're not, you know, it's not producing a television spot. It's not, you know, buying a big media buy. It's actually a relatively straightforward thing that you're doing, and the beautiful thing is you have Apple giving you free distribution. So you build this piece of technology, you tell your customers about it, they know where to get it, and, you know, it's a very nice ecosystem that Mr. Steve Jobs has built for us.
Ah, that's wonderful. Now, so roughly, give me some rules of thumb. If I'm trying to think about how and what and where, and then I got to think about how much, what should I be prepared? What kinds of, now I know that mine are going to be so creative, you're going to snap them right to the front of the line of those 20,000 and you're going to do it all for me. But for somebody who's sitting there and way back in the line, but they want to start paying to produce it.
Well, and I think that's a good chance to just kind of call out the incubator model in general too, because it's not like there's a line and it's not, you know, there's a huge library of ideas that we dip into from time to time. We have a whole bunch of developers on staff. When somebody's freed up and there's not another project for them to work on, we dig into the incubator and bring something new out. But it really isn't a process by which somebody who is looking to grow their company or has a very specific goal could really work, because it's not that kind of a relationship. It's really, you know, let's do something fun together and we treat it like that. For our, for our significant clients, we do what we call pre-development. There are lots of developers out there who will quote you a price just when you walk in the door, and they'll say, oh, it's $45,000, and they know that based on everything they've done, they can probably make their margins and they can make their money that way. We prefer not to work that way. From what we've seen and from the number of apps that we've built, and you know, we're now probably close to 50 apps that we've built, every single app is different. Or at least, and if it's good, there's something about it that's really unique. There's also some things about it that borrow from other architecture that you can take and lift and borrow. So what we do is every single app, we sit down and we go through this pre-development process. We architect it. We storyboard it. We talk about what functions does it need to have, what doesn't it need to have, who's the audience, how are they going to use it. And at the end of this entire pre-development process, we end up with what we call our storyboard. And the storyboard is a frame-by-frame, screen-by-screen. Here's everything that this app is going to do. Here are all the buttons. Here's all the navigation. And really, it's like looking at the application splayed out over a huge piece of paper. And from that, we can look at that document, and we can give an accurate budget, an accurate timeline. We can say, okay, this is 26 screens of design, and these are the complicated ones. These are the easy ones. This area right here is actually what's going to cost you the most money, because here's how it's going to work, and we can give people a really accurate price. What we like to do is we'll charge a flat fee for pre-development, and you know, we pre-development is basically anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 to go through that process where we, you know, we'll spend a couple of weeks, we'll dig in with you, and we'll come back with this complete set of tools. And at the end of pre-development, people say, okay, this is, you know, we tell all of our customers that really you've got a roadmap that if you wanted to go to somebody else and you didn't enjoy the pre-development process, you're no longer locked down to us. You can take it and work with anybody out there, but nobody has yet. I think people really like the process, and from there it's okay. This is what it's going to take to build, and we execute. From a bare bones kind of what does it cost level, you know, we're talking about custom development where we're building something brand new for people. You know, it's typically not your off-the-shelf solution. So we're looking anywhere from $10,000, $15,000 on the low end up to, you know, low six figures for some of the really bells and whistles, fancy things that we're doing. But, you know, it's all in between, and it really depends on what you're looking to do.
Okay. Now, where do you see this whole app revolution going?
Well, there's definitely right now we're going through a shakeout in the industry or a little bit of a consolidation. It's just too hard for consumers, and I'll go consumer side for a second. It's too hard for consumers to track 150,000 apps and to walk into this app store where there's just so much content, and the only thing that really differentiates the content is a little icon that you have to make your decision based on. And then, of course, you can dig in more and learn more and read more about the apps. But it's just a little bit overwhelming for consumers, and it's really difficult for developers to break through. So I think what we're going to see is we're going to start to see fewer and fewer of the indie developers just because it's not as attractive from a money-making standpoint for the independent developers as it used to. And I think that that's going to clear the way for people to treat this more like a platform for business, like a platform for some real significant development. I also think the next step is beyond Apple. Apple did a great job of getting people excited about apps, and, you know, nobody knew the word app 3 years ago, and now you say app and everybody knows exactly what it is. But that's coming to Android, and Google has their Android operating system, and there's BlackBerry, and you know, there's Nokia, and there's all different carriers, and every carrier is now getting into the app business. And I think that, you know, competition does great things, and I think we're going to see some really interesting innovation coming next.
Well, that's good. That's good. Now, I get the sense that you probably don't have all your developers sitting in real estate in your office.
Well, you kind of can't because every app is different, but each app, I would say, you know, 60% of our apps need the same types of developers, and we have those guys. But then 40% of the processes that we're doing are really custom. And for that, you know, for instance, we're doing an app right now with a 3D globe that you can zoom in and out of the globe, and you can twirl the globe, and you can navigate around it, and we're building it for an airline. It's a really custom interface that we're designing. The guy who's doing this that's what he does is 3D custom interfaces. It wouldn't make sense for us to have him on staff full-time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, he's somebody who we outsource to, but at the same time, all of our interface design, our user experience, the people who think through how this app works, that's all done on staff, and that's all done in-house. And uh-huh. Our technology is the lead for our technology is all in-house. It's just sometimes bits and pieces of it get put out and then brought back together.
Excellent. Well, now, tell me a little, give us some examples of some of the most successful apps that you've built.
Sure. So, I think our most successful app is an app called Mallmap, M-A-L-L, Mallmaps. It was one of our incubator apps. It was brought to us by a gentleman who spent 7 months, or probably about 4 months, trying to convince us to build the app, because we just kept telling him it's impossible. There's no way to collect the amount of data that you're looking to collect. His idea was to build an app that had every shopping mall in the country all indexed by GPS. You'd be able to, you know, press a button and find out where the nearest shopping mall is, what the stores are. It was a great idea. It was a great idea, but it didn't have any data. So we kept pushing away, Finally, one day he said, look, I've just indexed every shopping mall in the state of Alabama. Here's the file. I did all the work. I pulled everything together. Now can we do it? And at that point, we said, okay, now we can do it. So he actually did all the legwork to pull this incredible database together. Over the course of that period, he Twittered about it. He Facebooked about it. He kind of gathered some momentum behind what he was doing. We were very fortunate to line our development up for when we built the app, that it was released 2 weeks before Black Friday. And we knew, you know, as early as October, that if we can get this thing timed right for Black Friday, we're going to have a hit. We got it onto the App Store. Immediately we started getting some really positive reviews just based on the number of people that Shane had touched in his journey of collecting all of this data. The app caught on. It got some nice reviews on some great review sites. CNN picked up about it because it was right before Black Friday, and we ended up doing a little PR campaign around it as the ultimate app for Black Friday. Apple picked up on that and pronounced it as the must-have app for Black Friday. And over the course of the first 2 weeks, the app went to number one on the App Store. It made its money back and continued to make money really 2 weeks into the process. And it's been a very successful app for us. It's also gotten us into some great relationships because it's such a well-known retail app. So there's a lot of retailers that we're talking to just because of that. And it was just a great success story. You know, we also have a great game that people love, and that gets downloaded quite a bit. We've got an app right now that's called Pocket Reference that I think is number 20 on the store right now. It's a we're building so much content, and we're doing so many of these that now they become self-perpetuating because our user base is looking for what we're doing next, and we have a really nice repeat customer base, and we can get those apps up into the top echelons of the App Store because people like them, and as soon as they break into the top, then everybody sees them, and that's really where you get your success.
That's wonderful. Now, you and I talked yesterday about an idea. Let's see if you're still with us on this idea. We were talking about the possibility of having like a half day or maybe three quarters of a day where we would invite business owners in Orange County to come and spend some time with you and some of your developers just thinking through maybe some mini storyboarding, maybe some ideas, maybe helping them to see where they want to be, where they are now, and how a mobile app might help them. You still game to do that?
Yeah, I love that idea. I think it's so exciting. I mean, I'll tell you, I didn't tell you the story yesterday, but I'll just give you a quick story. So when I was growing up, my dad was an entrepreneur. My mom was an arts and crafts teacher. So, you know, my dad started businesses that did fabulously well and businesses that failed miserably. And it didn't matter which one they were, the conversation around the dinner table when I was growing up was always a combination of how do we make this business work better and, you know, what fun arts and crafts projects can we do? And I think that the intersection of just constantly thinking about business and how to grow businesses along with art and how to apply creativity and how to apply art to some of the things that my dad was doing just turned me into somebody who just loves working with business people to find creative solutions. So the idea of, you know, sitting in a room with 20 or 40 people and you know, talking about what people's business goals are and how we can use this exciting thing called mobile to help achieve them it's a really neat thing that I would love to be a part of.
Okay. Well, the Pilgrim on the 405, same website. Pilgrim on the 405 is going to, we'll announce it there. We'll send out some emails. We'll get some people involved. We'll probably get Steve Churn from OC Metro to see if he can announce it on his radio show and see if he can give us some suggestions. And I'm sure Jeffrey Schwartz will help us get some PR out there. And listen, Dave, I want to do two things. I want to thank you and also want to give you a little praise. You took some time off from being with your son, wasn't it, that soccer game to spend some time with us here?
So I'm parked at the field right now in my car, and soccer practice just got out, so I'm going to take him and a couple of his friends out to dinner. So they're very excited. Everybody wins. It all worked out.
That is wonderful. That is just absolutely wonderful. I really want to thank you for spending some time with us because you are one of the most exciting, innovative people in Orange County, and you're one of the people that's blazing a trail and leaving behind it all these little pieces of hope for people to recognize that there are businesses out there, there are customers there, there are things to do that will increase revenue for small businesses in Orange County. I want to thank you so much for being with us.
I want to thank you for the opportunity. This was a really fun thing to talk about, and I can't wait to talk to you some more about these plans for this event. And I would just throw out that, you know, ask people to check out metalmobile.com. That's our website. And, you know, if they have questions about mobile development, I'm very easy to reach. It's dave@metalmobile.com.
Excellent. Tell us again, where is it?
It's Metal Mobile, MEDLMOBILE.com. And I can be reached at dave@metalmobile.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dave. I've been looking forward to talking with you and putting this workshop together.
Oh, thank you, and have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And there we go, the second of our ongoing programs, Talks from the Pilgrim on the 405. Remember, our job is to find out where you want to be, where you are now, and what's getting in the way so we can bring resources to bear, show you examples and exemplars of people who are executing on their strategic plans to thrive in Orange County. We're at the Pilgrim on the 405.com. We're at 949-486-0733. We're at Wilchrist at Wilchrist.com. Any way that you want to get in touch with me, I'll be happy to talk with you. I'm looking for people who have stories to tell, resources to share. Here we are on the Pilgrim on the 405. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one and only Pilgrim on the 405 as he wanders the world of sales, only on octalkradio.net.